The Raising the Bar podcast, brought to you by the Association of Grazing Students.
Welcome to the Raising the Bar podcast, where we speak with students, barristers, King's Counsel and judges from Gray's Inn about their journeys to the bar, with the aim of supporting students and aspiring barristers. This year, Raising the Bar recognises the anniversary of 100 years of women at the bar and shines a light on stories of impact, change and leadership in all its forms. I'm your host for Season 5, Nora Nanayakara, a student member of Gray's Inn and a Baroness Hale Scholar. I hope our conversation and guests' advice help you on your journey to the bar to explore how Gray's Inn can help you to achieve your potential. Are you about to embark on the law conversion course but don't know how to fund it? Gray's Inn offers £1.4 million worth in scholarships every year, and its GDL scholarships support students undertaking full-time and part-time law conversion courses. The application process opens in March, with applications due in May, but please do check the website for details. To tell us more about GDL scholarships, I'm joined by a current GDL scholar, Tommy.
Hi, yeah, so I'm Tommy. I'm a current GDL scholar here at Gray's, studying at City in London.
Thanks, Tommy. Now, what were you studying before you started the GDL?
So I did History and International Relations as an undergraduate. I absolutely loved that. And then it's kind of coming to the end of that, started thinking about what am I like to do next. And that's what took me towards the GDL.
And what made you choose Gray's?
So the choice to choose Gray's, at the time, it was, I was overseas. I was working after I finished my undergraduate. I worked overseas for around 15 months. So it was purely through online. I couldn't come and visit the inn. And I heard rumours or read somewhere that they give the most money per head on scholarships. And I knew for me that if I got a scholarship, if it wasn't a relatively significant fund to cover the costs, it was meaningless in terms of actually allowing me to do the GDL. So that was a big contributor. Also, I saw that Gray's was quite a small inn, which I thought would be good on the training perspective. And so far, the qualifying sessions and the like I've done have been really good. And also just the actual scholarship process, reading about it, seeing it was purely merit-based, I liked. Sometimes on these forms where it's finance-based, even though I couldn't afford the GDL myself, you don't come off so well. So I knew the merit base was something I wanted. And I liked the fact that there was a paper sift. I thought I could write quite well and then I'd have a decent chance to interview.
That's so interesting because I really liked the paper sift as well. And I know some people prefer a process by which everybody gets an interview. But I felt that if I could survive the paper sift, it would be a good test of my own ability to actually make it at the bar. It was like the first test bed for me to know whether or not I could do this. So when I got the email to say that I had gotten an interview, I was so pleased. And it was really encouraging in a way that I think perhaps I wouldn't have felt if it had been a guaranteed interview. And like you, I think the fact that the awards are really quite meaningful, they made a real difference, certainly to my ability to finance the conversion course. So I would agree with you there.
I remember, similar to what you're saying there, getting a scholarship from elsewhere than Gray's, but of quite a small amount of money, but I got it before the Gray's one. And that was just a huge confidence boost of, you might actually be good enough to do this. I said to my parents when I was thinking about it, one, I needed the scholarship for finance, but I also said, if I'm unable to get the scholarship, it might not be the right career. It might not be something I have the appropriate skills to then go on to do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? There are so many, obviously, there will be loads of successful barristers who didn't get a scholarship. And, you know, there's absolutely a way to succeed without it. But I find that for me, it was that additional endorsement that could let me back myself for the next stage. So that's really helpful. Now, when you joined Gray's, you also took on a role on the Association of Gray's Inn Students, didn't you? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so the Association of Gray's Inn Students, or AGIS, effectively vouch for the interests of students at Gray's Inn. And I wanted to take a role in that. So my role is GDL officer. So I further the wishes of GDL students, both through advocating for things that I hear they want introduced, and through organising events that might be useful to them. So recently I organised an information evening on pupillage applications. And essentially it's a great thing to have here at Gray's Inn because it means the students have a voice and can have say in the inn. And we've made material changes so far, albeit sometimes slowly, and you've got to go through the processes through recommendations for the students.
Yeah, I think, and again, as you said earlier, because the inn is relatively small, it is possible to have that impact and to help change things so that future generations at the bar will see themselves reflected and represented at various levels in the inn. And of course, Aegis can only do that, can't it, with the engagement of students. So for any listeners who are GDL students or who are thinking of applying to Gray's for a GDL scholarship, do you have any encouragement for them in terms of getting involved?
Yes, well, essentially, the more you involve yourself with Aegis, the more Aegis can do for the student body, either through applying to be a member of Aegis yourself or just through contacting the appropriate Aegis member. Aegis as a body needs to know your wishes in order to deliver on them. So the more you engage, the better your students' experience at Gray's should be.
So if we turn then to the GDL scholarship application process, the first stage of that is a written form. So can you tell us about how you approached filling out that form? Any tips or advice for listeners?
Yeah, so there's the rough mark scheme available online, the kind of key attributes they're looking for. I can't remember them off by heart, sadly.
That's the merit criteria, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I went off that merit criteria and it kind of breaks it down. So it might say advocacy and then it might say oral and written. So, and I would really have that in mind and try and hit point by point exactly what they're looking for, to the extent that I had on my laptop screen both documents open side by side, the mark scheme and then my Word document, and try to hit those points. And then a useful tip I had, I submitted my answers to a university careers department, and they gave me the tip that I had been given lots of examples and questions, but all the questions said give an example. And they raised the point to me how that might show you've misinterpreted the question. Obviously, your interpretation of language is a key skill as a barrister. As someone who hasn't marked them, I don't know if that's true, but I changed it all to, if it said give an example or give one example, to do that. It seemed to work, but maybe other people give multiple and that works too.
That's so interesting. I gave one example for each as well. And like you, also took the opportunity to have my draft application form reviewed by the careers advisor at the university I was studying with. And that was so invaluable because she picked up on things that I would not have realised at all. And the word count is quite tight on that form. So any waffle is just a lost opportunity to make a really good point because you're using up valuable words, aren't you?
I think the word count's good to bear in mind in that it doesn't have to read like a beautiful story with connectives and adverbs. Essentially, I had in mind, I'm hitting point on point on point. So I remember in the problem solving question, there's on the mark scheme something like, well, not the mark scheme, but the merit criteria, something like making considered judgments and not arbitrary risks. So I would have a sentence bang on trying to hit that point, and I wouldn't, and then the next sentence would just follow on without any sort of connective. And it didn't read that wonderfully, I remember thinking at the time, but it was very, for me at least, and for the people I sent to, said it was very clear to read and it just hit those points. And I think if you're thinking of the person that marks it, although your written advocacy is being marked, they're looking against that criteria and they're ticking off what you say against that criteria. So that's what I would really stress.
That's right, I think. And also sometimes when the questions have multiple parts to them, one of the mistakes I was making before I had my draft application reviewed was that I was answering one part of it and not the other. So the star technique was something that was quite useful to make sure that I addressed all of the points. Did you find that useful?
Yeah, so that was doing my scholarship application was the first time I ever heard of the star technique. And I find you kind of naturally write that way in the way the questions pose. But definitely when I then came to edit my work, after I was told by a careers advisor about this technique, I really then tried to shape my answers by it. So those techniques where you're saying, what is the challenge you were presented? How did you adapt to this? And then what was the outcome is a good way to structure.
The thing I found helpful to bear in mind at the GDL stage is that they're looking for your potential as a barrister. So I was trying not to be discouraged by what I perceived to be a lack of specific relevant experience. So to really major on why it is that I would make a successful barrister was useful. And also that they are looking to see that you've considered the realities of being a barrister, that you haven't just watched a couple of episodes of, I don't know, Suits and decided that's a bit of me and failed to appreciate the fundamental differences between solicitors and barristers, for example. Do you think that?
Yeah, so I'm an interesting one on this because until probably near my interview, I wouldn't have been able to tell you the difference between a solicitor and a barrister before I started researching for the scholarship application. So I came to think about doing law very late. I'd never met a lawyer growing up. The thought had never occurred to me. And then towards the end of my undergraduate degree, I just started to think about what I might like to do and where sort of my skills matched. And then I thought lawyer, but I didn't really know what that meant. Doing the research, I thought more and more, this is something I might like to do. And when I say doing research, like you said, it's good to actually read books, go out and experience things. So I was, as I said, overseas, and I purposely organized to meet barristers in different jurisdictions and ask about what their jobs are like. But actually speaking to real people and reading books about real people and what the job is actually like. And that made me think I want to do this. And then I think if there's that classic question of why do you want to be a barrister? And if you can't answer that honestly, you shouldn't be applying. So people often say, how do you answer that? Just 100% honesty. Because I've already, doing the GDL, which is the lowest point, the least work demand, is a lot of work. So if it's not something you genuinely want to do, it's probably not something that's worth putting yourself through it.
It is intense, isn't it? People will have different reasons, won't they? There might be a trigger event in their lives or a series of events that made them consider becoming a barrister. But I think the panel will also want to see, like you've said, what research have you undertaken? Have you visited any courts? You should talk about it. If you've done research, this is the ideal place to talk about it. And if you've done any open days, so for example, Gray's Inn has a university advocacy day, which for me was a big factor in deciding on Grays. It's really helpful to go to those also because they'll give you some really helpful insights.
I think on that point, I was someone who very much had barely any experience from first considering it at the end of my undergraduate to then I immediately went the next day overseas. So I couldn't be doing many pupillages and the like. There's not to surprise people and there's a question, what kind of legal experience have you done? And I said, my legal experience is limited. And I think it's good to be honest, because if you've read one book or something, it will show if you don't have the real experience. But I just said, it's limited. It is limited for these reasons. But I've gone about trying to amending it by doing X, Y, Z. And that's brought about these results. And I think if your experiences are limited, as we're both proof of, it's not going to stop you getting anything, but you have to show you've taken steps to learn about what the career entails and really decide if this is something you might want to do. Obviously, you're asking the Inn to invest money in you, and they won't invest money in you if they think you're not going to go into the career. So it's worth knowing it's something you want to do. And if your experience is limited, think about evidencing how I can show this is something I have given thought to and I definitely want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about demonstrating that you've taken the initiative, isn't it? Because for my part, I was a mature student as a career changer. I had to go and do things in a very different way. And by being honest about that on the form, I think it helped because it showed my initiative. So what I found helpful, again, like you, didn't have any direct legal experience at the time in the GDL application, but I thought about activities and skills rather than job titles or venues. So although I wasn't working in a court, I was a decision maker in another area of my life, or I was dealing with people and having to persuade people who weren't very keen on my advice to take it, even though that wasn't in a courtroom. So I found that a useful way of doing
it. I think you have to, on the forms, extract every skill you have gained through your jobs and explain why that's appropriate to being a barrister. So I taught surfing for, well, windsurfing, taught water sports for 5 years. It's very different to being a barrister. But from doing that, I could talk about how I was confident speaking in front of people. Every Monday in my job before this, I'd go up and speak in front of 200 people and they were on holiday, so I had to try and make it humorous and engaging and not bore them all to sleep and make them walk off. So I could talk about that. Or I used to do a lot of sports coaching, and then there would be issues of people wouldn't be able to complete a session. That would make a problem. How did I adapt my session in the moment to fit that? So instead of thinking and dismissing your experiences, think, what skills did I learn in those experiences and how do they fit what I want to be doing?
Absolutely. It's about that mapping, isn't it? And I don't think that there's any life experience that somebody could have that would be completely irrelevant. I think it's what you do with it that matters. And they're looking for potential, they're looking for initiative, and they're looking, I think, for your motivation for coming to the bar. So those are all things to bear in mind. So moving on from skills then to qualities, because one of the questions, isn't it, is what qualities do you have that will make you a successful barrister? And I know I found this a difficult question to grapple with. So I looked, for example, at the merit criteria, which we've touched on. What approach did you take to that question?
So like you said, I looked at the merit criteria, but I slightly filtered it down from there. In that if you look at the merit criteria, and this will make more sense to people when they have the forms, most of the questions hit one of the merit criteria. So one of the merit criteria will be something like problem solving. And a question will be something along the lines of, talk about a time you solved a problem. So I then, for that question of what qualities do you have, I thought, I'll look at the merit criteria, and anything on that that's not specifically in a question is what I will talk about here. So I started very broadly with something like, on top of the qualities I have already mentioned, I can do X, Y, Z. Which if you actually looked at and you looked at next to the merit criteria, you would notice are those skills that just haven't naturally flown into another question.
That's great. Really helpful. The only other resources I think I used for that section were pupillage pages on Chambers websites, because sometimes they set out the qualities that Chambers are looking for. So I found that useful just in terms of thinking broadly about what I might be able to offer. And the other thing that I thought about in terms of qualities were the qualities that somebody in independent practice would need to be successful. Because barristers, certainly there are employed barristers, but for barristers that are self-employed, it's a referral business ultimately. So I think for my application form, I talked a lot about interpersonal skills, being able to deal with people, being able to build relationships.
Yeah, so I can't remember mine exactly, but I think the two points I talked about were public speaking confidence and how this will help translate into advocacy, and interpersonal skills, as you said. In that, I think a lot of people think about barristering as a solo career, when very much you may be kind of your own business, but you're within a wider team. You have to get on with people. I think that's true for any career. People want to work with people that they want to be at work with. So those were the two skills I identified. On your note of looking at pupillage websites and the like, I did a lot of that, and I listened to a lot of podcasts about pupillage interviews, because I heard in one other that pupillage interviews were very similar. I haven't yet done a pupillage interview, so I can't say for sure, but the tips I heard in that were really useful for me. I know we're going to get on to interview advice, but one I heard was just to keep your hands in contact with the table the whole time. So I just had my fingers loosely resting on the table. Luckily, I'm not a shaker when I'm nervous, so that didn't look like I was terrified. And that just helped me sort of stay present and keep myself under control, not look like I'm too erratic moving my hands around.
That's a great tip. Now, no doubt that podcast was the Raising the Bar podcast, wasn't it, Tommy?
It is a bit of a strange full circle moment for me today, because I did indeed listen to the Raising the Bar podcast whilst I was preparing.
What a great answer. So we'll move on now to the interview itself. I can remember very little of the GDL scholarship interview, I think because it's been overtaken for me by the Bar scholarship interview. So can you tell us a bit about your GDL interview and how you approached it and any tips and advice you'd have for somebody?
Yeah, so I'll start very broadly with kind of the format and then how I prep for that. So we were told in advance, and this is very much what happened, you will do a 3-minute presentation on one of two topics, which will be presented to you 15 minutes before on current affairs, and you'll have that 15 minute window to prep, and then you will deliver your presentation. I think it was 2 or 3 minutes, and then there'll be questions on that followed by general questions. So in preparation for that, I was quite lucky. My seasonal work overlapped, so I had a 2-week period at home not working back in the UK, so I could devote, I did nothing before that 2-week period because I was working flat out, and then I just had 2 weeks where I could think about the course. What was really useful to me, and I would recommend it to everyone, I read the news every day. The start point of that doesn't sound that drastic. It develops. I remember I subscribed to The Guardian and The Times, because I think you have to think of these news sources. I was a history student. I'm a bit obsessive about this sort of thing. They're very much not a vacuum of fact. There is a lot of interpretive leeway put on them. So The Guardian and The Times to make sure I was getting different perspectives. And then I had a document just on my phone on notes, nothing too drastic, of all the recurring themes that were coming up. So some I can remember were the problems of populism in politics, AI. I had both AI and protest rights, because that was in the news a lot of the time. It was when the government were trying to get through that bill of key workers not having so much striking rights. And both AI and that came up in the interview. So
yes, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I do now have a flashback memory of preparing a piece on striking. So that's really interesting.
Good. I was worried I said something I wasn't allowed to say there. So I had these, and all this notes document was these key themes. And then I would have like one word to sum up an argument to remind me in my head. And I would try to have 3 on each side, or a minimum of 2 if I couldn't have a third. So on AI, it would be as basic as for and against. And on 4, I might have efficiency. And on against, I might have data breaches. It wasn't anything technical. But on these recurring themes, I did do a lot of wider reading. So I started broad with the news, recognized these key themes, and then I really delved deep into the 4, 5, maybe 6 key themes I noticed coming up almost every day in the news. And I went quite deep into those, reading academic papers and the like. And when that came up in interview, it just meant I actually really enjoyed the process of presenting on it, because I felt I knew what I was talking about. The panel, which was good, one of them really knew about AI. So I quite enjoyed the process. It was kind of a bit like mooting, a bit of an intellectual joust of...
How great.
I was lucky. I remember coming out of the interview and calling my dad and saying, before the interview, we can get onto this, I wasn't nervous, which was really fortunate, because I thought I had no chance of getting it. So I just saw it as a learning experience. After the interview, I said to my dad, I was so lucky. The 2 things I prepared came up, so I think I might get it. Fingers crossed for the bar course, the same happens again. But we'll just see.
That's great. That is really good luck. I think for people listening, it might be helpful to know that you're unlikely to be asked about a Supreme Court decision or anything like that. As Tommy said, they're much more likely to be current affairs topics, things that you'll be hearing about on the radio, on podcasts, you know, reading the news. And it can be as simple as 2 or 3 points for and against. I've also had some great advice from a university careers advisor, which was to try and keep a structure. So if you can't think of anything particularly legal to say, which is fine because you haven't yet studied law, you can think about something You can think about an argument that might be a moral argument, a financial argument, an economic argument, and those are all really great answers too. So after the legal topic then, there was the questions, wasn't there, Tommy? Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So the questions will relate directly to the merit criteria. Actually, I say directly, I would say more indirectly. So in the sense that the merit criteria might say motivation, drive, work ethic. I remember in my interview, because I had prepared, on top of this notes page, I'd prepared a document of standard interview questions. And again, I would warn people against being too rehearsed. I didn't have scripts here. I just had little prompters in my mind. But one I didn't have, I remember being asked to talk about time you'd shown resilience. Luckily, but my big tip for anyone is just answer honestly. I just went with the first example that came to mind. But I think a key tip for those questions is have the merit criteria in mind. But as I said, don't be over rehearsed, because if you over rehearse and you get asked a question like me with the resilience one, where you haven't prepared for that question, if your interview is like a script, you might then get stuck in that zone. Whereas if you just go in with some preparation, some examples. So I tried to have three examples for every single one of the merit criteria. Then if they are something that loosely relates to that, you can probably adjust it on. On that note, though, it is an important thing to answer the question you're asked, I think, is a key thing. Yeah. Don't try to talk about some great experience you've done if it's not relevant. I think that's just general interview qualities, though.
Yeah, but great advice, though, about not being overly scripted, because I think we're all more persuasive when we talk genuinely and authentically and not reading robotically from a script or trying to regurgitate something that we've learned verbatim. So I think a panel will always, particularly for a GDL interview where they're looking for your potential and your motivation, the more honest, the more authentic you can be, the better a sense the panel will have of how successful you're likely to be in the profession. So that's good advice.
Yeah, on that note, that in my experience, they very much were not trying to catch you out. It was a case of they're trying to see the potential in you, I guess, but it really just felt like a chat in that, especially when we were talking about the legal topics, it was something I was interested in and they were clearly interested in. And we were almost like coming to these answers together. It's not something, when I said to do my prep and read further, I don't think you need to overthink it and overstress. I would definitely try to know about what's going on in the world, but I think I could have had less prep for that element. I'm not saying I would have liked it. It was great to be fully prepared. But you don't have to really worry if you haven't got the time. You're just having a normal conversation, and hopefully they see some kind of potential in you.
That's right. I think I had only realized quite late that I was able to apply for a GDL scholarship because I had already started the course. I was doing it part-time and I didn't realize that I could still apply.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I had already started, and then I'd gone to the University Advocacy Day here, and they had told me you absolutely should apply for the GDL scholarship. And I had thought I wasn't able to for two reasons. One, I'd already started the GDL. And secondly, I had it in my head that it was purely academically focused. And because I didn't have a first class degree for my undergraduate degree, that would rule me out. That is definitely not true, by the way. So when they ask you on that application form for your academics, you shouldn't worry about the fact that if, like me, you didn't have a first class degree, that's okay.
I think you on that note as well, it's important not to stress if you don't have a wide knowledge of the bar. And that's probably quite an embarrassing admission, but I didn't know what an in of court was by December of 2022, and I was applying in 2023 for the scholarship. I did my research into, first I discovered I might want to be a barrister, and then I started thinking, I saw the fees associated with the course, and I thought, how do I afford this? And started doing research, and it was only through that I came across in of course. So I think if you, it can be quite a daunting thing. I remember from myself, I'd heard, you hear about the bar as a bit of a boys club, I guess is a outdated term, but of a kind of who you know environment. Whereas the Inn was a great example and functions brilliantly at breaking that down. The scholarships are evidence of that. And I think if you do your research, the inn makes it quite easy for you. Not easy, it's a competitive process, but they're not there to, it's not testing your knowledge of how precedent works in the English legal system. They're there to help you out and see potential that you may have.
I think that's so true. And hopefully listeners will be encouraged by this conversation to put their best foot forward on the application form and in the interview, because ultimately the inn wants to give that money to the people who are most likely to succeed at the bar. And you'll know yourself if that's you. So you just need to tell them in your own honest way.
I think a really important thing on the idea of yourself succeeding in the bar is I think you have to see those skills in yourself, but you don't necessarily need to think you're the finished article. So like I said earlier, I thought I had no chance of getting the scholarship that time round because of my lack of legal experience. But I saw it as a learning opportunity for, my plan was to then stay in the UK, gain experience and go for it again the next year. And I think if you can get in your mindset when you're applying that every stage of the application you get to, whether you falter at the written application hurdle, whether you don't make it past interview, if you get those experiences, it's going to help you out so much more the next year. So if you are committed to becoming a barrister, if you've got to be in it to win it, as the old adage goes, I would just apply, even if you think you're not ready to apply, because you never know, they might see something in you. And if for whatever reason it doesn't work out that year, it will help you out so much the next time round.
That's a really great note to end today's episode on. Thanks so much, Tommy. And a reminder to listeners that those who are successful in the GDL scholarship process and who are awarded a GDL scholarship automatically qualify for an interview for a bar course scholarship. Thanks again, Tommy, for joining us today and telling us about the GDL scholarship.
Yep, thank you. It was a pleasure.
I hope our advice and tips on preparing for your GDL scholarship application was helpful. Thanks to Grays Inn for their support and to the podcast company for producing. Be sure to catch the next episode about life at Grays Inn, where there will be more tips and advice for aspiring scholars and students. Look forward to catching up next time.
Thanks for listening to the Raising the Bar podcast. Please follow, rate and review on your podcast app. And for more information, check us out on Twitter at AGI Students.